Welcome to The Bridge, a twice-weekly magazine show featuring local and regional stories. I'm Kathleen Morgain, your host for the show. This morning at 10:17, Coast Community Radio and agencies around the region will participate in the Great Shakeout. In a few minutes, we'll hear from Tillamook Emergency Manager Gordon McCraw about why these drills are important. Also on the show, Robert Jake Jacob, owner and developer of Astoria's Cannery Pier Hotel, would like to see new life for one of Astoria's old buildings, the Armory.
People see that space, they see it in the winter, and what's really cool, the winter months, the shoulder seasons, you may have 2,000-3,000 people over 4 days for whatever event.
We'll hear about Jacob's vision for the Armory and about tomorrow's open house where everyone can have a look. That story coming up in 4 minutes. This is Coast Community Radio. NPR News headlines are next. The time is 9:01. You're listening to The Bridge here on Coast Community Radio. I'm Kathleen Morgain. Today, people across the nation will participate in the Great Shakeout, an annual earthquake preparedness drill. It's well known the American West Coast is part of the Ring of Fire, and geologists continue to learn more about the Cascadia subduction zone just off our shores. Geologic history tells us we're overdue for a significant earthquake, but the possibility or probability of experiencing one gets set aside as we deal with our daily priorities. This morning, emergency managers want us all to give it some thought. Earlier, I spoke with Gordon McCraw, director of Tillamook Emergency Management. Here's how that conversation went.
Good morning. Ready to talk about the Great Oregon Shakeout?
I'm just shaking in my boots to do it.
Okay. Now, this has been going on for years, and why do we do this every year?
Well, it actually started, back in Southern California around 2008 as part of the earthquake exercise. It was designed to educate the public about how to protect themselves during a large earthquake. Needless to say, it caught on, and it's continued every year, adding more and more states and now other countries. And at last tally, there was over 17 million registered participants in the U.S., 23 million worldwide, of which a check just before you called showed that about just under 248,000 people in Oregon have registered this year, of which Tillamook has about 2,000, just under 2,200 people registered. And Clatsop, up near your neck of the woods, is neck and neck with us. So, again, we hope to encourage people to drop cover and hold, educate them about the earthquake hazard that we face here in Oregon.
And there's nothing like practice to help make it real. Here on the coast, Clatsop, Tillamook counties, we have a potential hazard that other places in the country don't face, and that is a tsunami. And how do you feel that agencies have learned after the 2011 tsunami event in Japan?
Well, obviously, we learned a lot from the Japanese earthquake, both in how to deal with a distant tsunami, because it did give us one. And it is also good news, of course, has given a good wake-up call for people in the Pacific Northwest to see in terms of what to expect from a large 9.0 or higher earthquake, which is what potentially could come from the Cascadia subduction zone, which is 70 miles off our coast, running 600 miles north to south from Vancouver to Northern California. So all of that area has the potential that we could see like damage from an earthquake that lasts 3 to 5 minutes, and then about 15 minutes later, a large tsunami, just as Japan did. So again, it served as a great wake-up call and got interest. Hopefully you've seen or heard about the Oregon Resilience Plan that came out that told a lot of sobering numbers in terms of what infrastructure could look like and how long it would take for these systems to come back online after a severe earthquake like that.
In the short run, we would pretty much have to rely on ourselves. I think by now we all have the message not just to drop cover and hold, but if we're in a vulnerable area, to then move to high ground.
Yes, one of the big things that we did recently was dismantling our tsunami sirens. They turned out to be more confusing than informative. when you consider the fact that I've been in an earthquake, that the one in San Francisco back in 89, and it lasted 15 to 17 seconds, and there's no doubt that you are in an earthquake. But to wrap my brain around one that's going to be a 9.0 and last 3 to 5 minutes, you're not going to need sirens or anything else to tell you. You're right. Once the ground stops shaking and your knees have stopped shaking enough that you can, in fact, run, go up to high ground. Some of the other lessons that we've learned, of course, is that, you know, we harp on having a 72-hour kit, but after Hurricane Katrina and as recently as Hurricane Sandy, the outputs from that suggest that you need to have about a 10-day kit, more realistic. Of course, you make it difficult to carry up the side of a hill, but at least if you have it in the house, and more realistic is probably 1 to 2 weeks worth of food on hand to sustain you until relief supplies can come in from where we're going to come, considering what our roads are going to look like, what the bridges are going to look like, just all the devastation that's going to be around.
So a multi-day supply of food, water, and fuel, if possible, would be good things to have on hand.
Yeah, of course, everything drives off of fuel. You know, a typical example is, do you have a communications plan? And if the plan includes talking on a telephone or a cell phone, your plan is already flawed because those things are probably not going to work. To get those things back in service, you need electricity, which, of course, those lines are going to be down. To get the electricity working again, you're going to have people riding on the roads to the repair points. But, of course, the roads are going to be devastated. So you can see it's just a cascading effect that it's going to be a long time before things return to whatever you consider normal.
Well, we hope the worst does not come to pass, but if it does, these conversations that we're having during the shakeout are good to keep us all, give us all reminders on what we can do to prepare, the best we can do to prepare. Is there anything else that you'd like to tell our listeners this morning?
Well, I just remember that one of the facts that Dagami said with regard to the Cascadia subduction zone earthquake and the history of it over the last 10,000 years, we've already exceeded 75% of the quiet times between earthquakes.
And that is a sobering message indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I hope everybody takes a few seconds to take part in the Oregon Shakeout coming up at 10:17 this morning. Thank you very much for talking with us this morning, Gordon McCraw.
It was my pleasure.
Again, the Great American Shakeout Earthquake Drill will take place at 10:17 this morning. OSU Coastal Hazard Specialist Patrick Corcoran will be joining our station manager, Joanne Rideout, for a special earthquake preparedness show surrounding the drill, and that show starts at 10 this morning. Ballots start going out today for the general election in Washington and Oregon. Many local issues and races will be on the ballot. This morning, we'll hear from candidates for the contested race for position one on the Ilwaco Port Commission. Coast Community Radio's Maria Brooks spoke with Steve Newell, recently appointed to the position, and his challenger, Robert Hamilton.
On November 5th this year, the residents of some coastal communities of Pacific County and Washington State will elect their representatives. On the ballot are the offices of the Port Commissioners. People living outside the Long Beach Peninsula may be unaware that several small ports support the economies of these areas. For Ilwaco, Chinook, Nakata, and Willapa Harbor, their harbors are the mainstays for small-scale commercial and recreational fishing and fish processing plants. But today, these small ports and their industries are under threat. Sediments and sludge filters down into access channels and require regular dredging, which is very costly. Until now, the federal government, through the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, earmarked money to dredge ports, even the smaller ones, around the country. But these monies are no longer available. Ports are now on their own to come up with the funding to keep their channels from strangling on the sludge and debris. To take up the challenge, two men, Steve Newell and Bob Hamilton, are running for the office of number one port commissioner in Ilwaco. Steve Newell was appointed temporary commissioner several months ago to cover the position that had been vacated. He is now running for full term. Newell has lived on the peninsula for 40 years. He's a fisherman and a local building contractor and has raised his family here.
We got to dredge that port to get bigger boats in there for the revenue. You know, they moor their boat in there, they get groceries, they bring money to that port. And so that's why we got to keep it dredged for bigger boats. We don't want to be like Chinook and not be able to get in and out of port. Chinook is a very bad port because they don't have any funding or any money to dredge, and big boats got to wait for, they can't come and go as we can at any certain time of the tide. They have to wait for high water to get out in Chinook, where we don't have to.
Running against Newell is Bob Hamilton. He came to the peninsula in 1993 and operated a cranberry farm, which he sold recently.
With me, I've got a degree in business administration. I spent about 20 years of my life working in the electric utility business, which is private enterprise. I've been self-employed for at least 16 plus years, and I feel that I have a fairly good knowledge of business. I think the port is served well the sports fishery group and the commercial fishing industry. And I think that my background in terms of business would be a good mix. The Coast Guard made the port aware that they went aground, or at least came very close, not too long ago. And this is where the port and the Corps of Engineers kind of have a little problem, because the Corps of Engineers is trying to pass off that responsibility to the port. And the port, I believe, is saying, wait a minute, that's not our responsibility. You know, you're the federal dredger of the federal waters. Therefore, it's your job. You know, you shouldn't be pawning it off to us.
Steve Newell, or Bob Hamilton, will join two other commissioners and a port manager in running the Port of Iwako, with its picturesque marina that lies just inside the Columbia River Bar. Troubled waters may lay ahead, but Steve Newell and Bob Hamilton believe they can steer a course to maintain these small but important ports on the Washington Peninsula. This is Maria Brooks for Coast Community Radio.
Still ahead, there may be new life in store for Astoria's Armory Building.
People see that space, they see it in the winter. And what's really cool, the winter months, the shoulder seasons, you may have 2,000-3,000 people over 4 days for whatever event.
Robert Jake Jacob, owner and developer of Astoria's Cannery Pier Hotel, talks about his vision for the Armory and about tomorrow's open house. That story coming up right after this weather break. Here's the National Weather Service forecast for the Lower Columbia Coastal Region. Partly cloudy this morning, then clearing up for a sunny day. Highs 65 to 70 degrees with northeast winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly clear. Patchy fog after midnight. Overnight lows in the mid-40s. The continued high-pressure system over our area promises a nice weekend coming up, with continued highs in the mid to high 60s, overnight lows around 40. Astoria is becoming known as a town that values its past. In recent decades, city landmarks like the Flavel House and Liberty Theater have been restored and refurbished to be used and enjoyed by a new generation of Astorians. More utilitarian buildings like Pier 39 and the building now housing the Blue Scorcher Bakery and the Fort George Brewery have been rehabbed for reuse. And now another building may be next in line. With me in the studio this morning is Robert Jake Jacob, the owner and developer of the Cannery Pier Hotel, and he's going to tell us about another building in Astoria that some regard as a community asset, and he's going to tell us a little bit about why that is so.
Thanks for having me on. It's exciting to try to let the public know what's happening. In 1941, the National Guard, with all the military stationed out here during the war, built this enormous assembly hall called the National Guard Armory. And they used it for all of their winter festivities, and it's got a full basement that they stored all their weapons and vehicles. The community kept borrowing it, and especially after the military left, housed everything in its history. It had every regatta coronation, every big event, they had almost, there was a picture, I think it was in Hipfish, showing suits and ties people on the floor. The balcony alone, mezzanine, seats about 700 people with intact bleachers. The bleachers that came down to the floor for basketball, which used to have the Astoria High School play there, was about 3,000 people, Johnny England told me. The had the Harlem Globetrotters, it had auto shows, it had home and garden, and it was just an unbelievable multi-purpose use. When I was a kid, that's where you skated. Michelle Reeves says it's kind of rough in the winter for the youth. When I was a kid, you had the YMCA, the roller rink at the Armory.
Well, let's back up a minute. Michelle Reeves was the consultant that the Astoria Downtown Historic District Association hired to give us some ideas on how to make Astoria more attractive to visitors and to people who live here.
Correct.
Okay. Now, you said earlier that the building will hold about 3,000 people. So that makes it pretty unique amongst all the counties in the Lower Columbia area. There's probably nothing that holds that many people outside of an aircraft hangar.
You got it. The like the Liberty Theater, let's say 660, but you can't dance. This could hold 2,500, 3,000 people with a dance floor. Has a huge stage. So it's not competing with really anybody. And it's such a different, unique space. So since we've been tinkering with it, we've had so many people come out of the woodwork saying, I could have the whatever they call it, mountain climbing that comes in templates. They said we would love to have an indoor skating park that comes in templates while you have kids skating around it and roped off with that in the center. We've had people like the traveling, it's on TV where you bring your jewelry and antiques, and that would 3 days, the guy said he would bring in literally thousands of people. He's not happy with the other venues in Oregon. Plus, it's an historic, funky-looking building. People love that. And Astoria. If you've got 3 days to have, let's say, the Home and Garden Show, you find Astoria is pretty fun when you get off work for dinners, wines, shops, just the waterfront. It's a fun place to hang out. And that's why we think we could just draw a whole lot of people to that, let alone get more people at the country western level and be able to dance and not have to be bused anywhere. They can walk, take a trolley, or park.
So a multi-use building that already exists in downtown Astoria that holds 3,000 people. Now, how about the structural integrity of this 1940s building? Has that been investigated?
Yes, it has. I presently am working with this structural engineer to come up because nobody believes that I went to School of Architecture and passed any state boards. So, and I'm prejudiced. So I've got a guy coming in. The way I look at it is that building made it through the Columbus Day storm. It made it through the 07 storm, 140-mile-an-hour winds. And it's still there. The roof does not leak. The gymnasium floor has no buckles or water stain. It is an amazing, intact building. People are always afraid of that kind of structural integrity, but we're sure we can prove that the building's just ducky. And plus, between the columns, the giant pilasters, we could put windows along that whole top wall in between the columns and bring light in from the north side and the south side, just cut through the concrete because it's non-structural, which would just open it up even better for natural light.
Now, have you talked to anyone about the ultimate entity that would be responsible for the building, in charge of the building, or indeed own the building?
These are the doodads, Kathleen, that make me insane. But thank God on this committee or board or what have you, the Friends of the Armory has a nonprofit, and we're now forming all those entities so that there would be an organization that could operate it through volunteers and paid people for like the marketing, whether it's part-time. And that is all being assembled right now because the city bought that building and the parking lot simultaneously. They're turning it over to Craft 3. It used to be Shore Bank. And then Craft 3 will be the owner, let's say, in December. And then we have to convince Craft 3 in 4 months that us goofy kids know how to put this together. It would cost about $4 million plus to build that building today, and nobody in their right mind would build a $4 million building in a town of 10,000 trying to figure out how does that amortize my ridiculous mortgage. But at $250,000 on a contract, it is the price of a small home. It's just insane.
So what you're saying right now is that the purchase price is $250,000. So the city of Astoria has passed this through to Kraft 3 at this point?
No, they will at closing. That happens in December. The city made it quiet. And, you know, they don't want to own it. They don't need another building to mess with. Kraft 3 is a different structure. The city will get the parking lot for the Coast Guard, and then they will simultaneously turn that building over to Kraft 3. Kraft 3 knows that we don't want to come up with $250. They will sell it to us on a contract, and that we can crack that nut basically from renting out the basement. Then we would go about trying to secure raising funds for more bleachers, fixing it up. The old baby boomers in Astoria, I think, would flock there if they would have a big band on that enormous stage and you could get up and dance. There's not a whole lot of places to do that. So we're having so many people come out of the woodwork and say, if you secure that space, could I rent that for this? And all the ideas that come, we never would have thought of them, but people see that space. They see it in the winter. And what's really cool, if the community was able to tie that building down and put it together and slowly raise funds to fix it a piece at a time, the winter months, the shoulder seasons, you may have 2,000-3,000 people over 4 days for whatever event, and they got to eat, have dessert, they got to have a glass of wine or a beer, and Astoria is just a place. Plus, the shops would love to have a bunch of people get off work and wander through downtown saying, what a cool town.
Well, there are probably some people listening right now that, what is this great building and where is it? They probably have no idea where this armory building is, but tomorrow they will have a chance to see it in the inside. You're going to give inside tours as well?
Correct. Tomorrow at noon will be an open house. Now, it's on the main entrance is kind of nondescript. The whole building is nondescript. It's just a giant concrete box, takes up the city. If you walk out of the Moose Lodge, you'd run into the east wall. If you walk out of Bow Picker and turned around with your fish, you'd run into the north wall. And it's right next to the Heritage House. The main entrance where they would come in on Friday noon tomorrow would be on Exchange Street.
Okay, and then if people come tomorrow, will there be an opportunity to talk to some of the board members of the Friends of organization and perhaps get involved with that?
Yeah, all but one. We're all going to try to be there to try to talk to them. We're not asking for people to come with money eventually down the road. I hate fundraising or doing this, but we would like them to be interested and be a part of the community. And maybe they just come through and look. Maybe they got ideas. Maybe if we do convince Kraft 3 that we know how to pay for it, maybe they'll be willing to bring a bucket and a brush, you know, when we start cleaning it. And the nice part of it is it's rated an assembly building, grandfathered in. We don't have to do anything. First thing I did was get Jack Applegate, Paul Benoit, the city manager, and Brett Estes, the community planner. They walked through it with me in the beginning, and they all said the same thing. It's grandfathered in. It's assembly type B occupancy. Jake, there's a couple of security exit lights, fire code lights, but it's ready to go. And so that's what's exciting. We don't have to upgrade everything. And, you know, if we raise $5,000 and do this, $10,000 to raise a couple of bleachers, you know, and then raise 15 over the course of a few years, eventually you'd have a building worth $4 million. And we didn't have to add $1 million to fix it.
Okay, well, Jake, you've certainly made a powerful case for restoring this building. Thank you so much for coming in this morning and talking about it. And again, the open house takes place tomorrow at noon.
Thanks a bunch.
All right. As a postscript, Kraft 3 is a nonprofit community development financial institution that, among other things, lends money to other nonprofits. Based in Ilwaukee, Washington, with offices in Astoria, Port Angeles, Portland, and Seattle, Craft 3 provides loans and assistance to entrepreneurs, nonprofits, individuals, and others who don't normally have access to financing. If the proposed real estate deal goes through, the city of Astoria will purchase the armory from the Maritime Museum. The museum will gain a parcel of city property adjacent to the old rail depot to be used for parking. Then the Friends of the Armory Group will have several months to put together a sustainable plan that would justify a loan through Craft 3 to purchase the property. Well, that's all for today's edition of The Bridge. The Bridge airs Tuesday and Thursday mornings at 9. I'm Kathleen Morgain. Thanks for listening this morning. We welcome your feedback on the show. Call us at 503-325-0010 or email to news1, that's N-E-W-S, then the numeral 1, at kmun.org. The Bridge is a production of Coast Community Radio.